Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Megan Kamrick. The U.S. Forest Service is rewriting its plans for all the national forests in New Mexico, including the Carson National Forest, which covers 1.3 million acres in the northern part of the state. Part of that process includes determining if more areas should be designated as wilderness. That's turning out to be quite controversial, as some residents fear this will restrict their historic access and use of the land. There are 54 communities within the Carson Forest boundaries. How will the plan balance environmental protection and the needs of longtime residents in these areas? What is the role of public lands in our state and our country? What would it mean to have more areas designated as wilderness? Join our conversation by calling 277-5866 or email callinshow@kunm.org. Audrey Kirkendall is here. She's Planning and Minerals Staff Officer with the Carson National Forest. Thank you for joining us, Audrey.
Thanks for having me.
So, Audrey, give us a brief overview. Why is the Forest Service revising these plans?
Well, the Carson National Forest's plan is over just about 30 years old, and a lot has changed in the time that we signed that plan. We have new science out there on what is going on the forest and how we should be managing it. Conditions have changed quite a bit from before. And we also have different uses out there and different values and different people have changed as far as how they use the forest and who they are.
And what is it supposed to do? What's the end goal?
The forest plan or the land and resource management plan is basically like a zoning plan, or it's to look at what is the best use of different parts of the national forest, and we really do incorporate the public involvement in it in order to really come up with something that's a plan for everyone.
Michael Kasaus, you are here, did I say your name correctly, with the Wilderness Society. Thank you for joining us. Briefly, what opportunities does your organization see in this process with the revised plan for the Carson and for other national forests in New Mexico?
Well, whenever a forest is revising or updating its forest plan, the Wilderness Society engages heavily because these plans are really so very important, not only for the plants and animals that live there, but also for the people and the communities that use and rely on the forest. So an updated forest plan can, for example, restore wildlife habitats, it can improve recreation opportunities, and it can help ecosystems adapt to climate change. And it can also have tremendous conservation value because we can protect the most special places in the forest within the plan. And that's why it's so important that the plan be updated on a semi-regular basis. Finally, I think the process of revising the plan is important because under the new 2012 Forest Service planning guidelines, they place a strong emphasis on collaborative public engagement, which really provides all of us with a real opportunity to engage in the process to protect the land, water, wildlife, and recreational opportunities that are important to us.
Now, Audrey, I know there have been a number of meetings so far. Some of these have started to become rather contentious, often around the possibility of putting more land with a wilderness designation. So I understand the Forest Service has even received some bomb threats and death threats around this issue. Is that true?
There have been phone calls to the district offices. I don't know enough about them.
Okay. So, what is the feedback you're getting? Tell us why this is becoming so heated.
Well, I think that first of all, I think it's a complicated process for people to understand. We're not the steps that we take to go through the wilderness process, which is a process within a process. We have the forest plan revision, and then wilderness is only a very small part. But we are dealing with this right now, and it has four steps to it. And the first step is an inventory, which is a very broad brush of a starting point for us in determining whether there's any place out on the forest that still has wilderness character. And so when we generated that map, which was called the inventory map, it was pretty much about 60% of the forest. And people were upset because they thought that was sort of the designation that we were, but we were basically starting from that point. And we're right now in the step two, which is the evaluation process of going through those areas that are on the inventory map and coming up with which ones really do have wilderness character, which will be basically where we're funneling down the number of areas on the forest. So I think it's more of, I think people have a passion both for and against wilderness. I think because wilderness would keep people from using their vehicles or ATVs or any kind of mechanical or motorized use in on parts of the forest. People feel that they might not have access where they used to have access. So there are a lot of people that are just concerned about whether it'll change what they're doing and how they use the forest.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Megan Kamrick. We're talking about the Carson National Forest and the revised management plan that's now underway there. That could include suggesting more areas be designated as wilderness areas. Do you use forest lands? What do you think is the right balance between public use and preservation? You can join the conversation by calling 277-5866 or email callinshow@kunm.org. Also here in the studio, Arturo Archuleta with the New Mexico Land Grant Council. Welcome.
Good morning.
Arturo, this process has brought up a lot of historic resentments among some of the land grant heirs in northern New Mexico. And just to review briefly for our listeners, these are folks whose ancestors have been on this land for hundreds of years. It was granted to them by the King of Spain. They relied on these lands and the commons to raise crops and animals, harvest timber, hunt, to basically live. Talk about the importance of the land to these communities. So what is it about these areas that makes access to the land so important?
Well, as you mentioned, the significance of the land is these communities have survived off of it for hundreds of years. They really have had a history of sort of a subsistence-based living. And so there's a lot of traditional uses in those areas that continue to this day. For example, firewood collection is huge for a lot of the communities in northern New Mexico. There's no natural gas in a lot of these places, and propane can be quite expensive. And so utilizing fuel wood to heat your home or even for cooking in many instances is still sort of a big deal for folks in those communities. And so you have a lot of areas where there's these longstanding issues that were former common lands that through either the adjudication process, when the United States was trying to recognize titles, didn't give all the lands, or through default taxes, because these communities that were land rich but cash poor were then taxed by the state, so they lost some lands that way. So, you know, there's a lot of ties to these areas, and a lot of those former common lands are now managed by the Carson.
And what are your concerns about how some of these revisions might impact these communities?
Well, the most important thing, I think, about the forest plan revision this go-round is that it's actually – there's an opportunity now for our communities to get some of those issues addressed. In the past plan that was done 30 years ago, there's no mention at all of traditional uses of land-grant communities and the impacts that different types of management could have on those uses. And so this is now an opportunity, hopefully, to sort of look at that and evaluate those, even with the wilderness process, to evaluate what would be the impacts if they determine which areas have great wilderness character, what would be the impact on those traditional uses. And that's sort of what the process is happening right now.
We have a couple of calls already about this. I want to go to George in Albuquerque. George, what is your comment or question about this topic? George, are you there? Hello, George. Okay. We're going to go to Esther in Cuesta. It's in northern New Mexico. Esther, what is your question or comment about this topic?
I have a comment.
Okay.
And I'm with San Antonio del Rio Colorado Land Grant in Cuesta, New Mexico. And I think the process is a good process, and I hope that the land grants are allowed to sit at the table and have a voice in this process, because I think the cultural and historical uses for our people is very important. And we also have to look at how we protect those cultural uses. That I don't think wilderness totally is going to take all of that away from us. We're interested in protecting our grazing rights, our hunting, our fishing, our herb gathering, our pinon picking, our wood gathering, because that is very important to the people that that sit in land grants throughout New Mexico. But I think it's really important that people come go in and have a voice. Have a voice. Sit at the table when decisions are being made about our common lands. And I have worked with people with the wilderness people, and I see that they too want to protect our land. And I think it's important that we as people sit together and work things out where we continue to protect our land. And so I hope that people get a chance to sit at the table when all this management decisions are being made.
Thank you very much, Esther. Audrey, is that process happening?
Yes. We have developed a cooperating agency working group, and it includes the New Mexico Land Grant Council, and Arturo is a part of that. In fact, we had a meeting yesterday just to go over the inventory map and then look at the evaluation polygons or areas that we've come up with. And so that is a really important part of trying to engage, and we are doing it through these cooperating agency working groups. And also we have an agreement with the New Mexico Land Grant Council to help host meetings that are with specific land grant grants as well. And maybe Arturo can kind of elaborate a little more about his involvement. And
you want to say anything more there, Arturo?
No, sure. Okay. I mean, I think the council is participating as a cooperative agency. We also advocate that the land grants themselves, you know, those that are units of government, have an opportunity to sort of meet with the Forest Service and voice their concerns. And that's part of what that agreement will allow for us to be able to sort of host meetings that are specific for land grant communities, those that are units of government, to be able to sort of sit at the table and express sort of their concerns or, you know, give their opinions as to how they think the land should be managed that are former common lands.
We have another caller. We have Carol from Glorieta. Carol, what is your comment or question for us this morning on the call-in show?
Hi. I hike and I've camped in the Carson National Forest along 518 on the north side of the Pecos Wilderness, and there is so much water there. There are wetlands and there are streams, and my question is, what is the connection of wilderness to water?
Michael Casals with the Wilderness Society, do you want to address that?
Sure. Well, I think there's strong connections. I mean, we can look at the scientific research that's shown that watersheds that are protected as wilderness are the healthiest watersheds, not only in New Mexico, but throughout the West. And if you kind of think about where our water comes from, where acequia communities, farming communities get their water from, they are from these highland mountainous areas. And that's where water originates. And if you have industrial development, if you have roads, if you have other types of mining or oil and gas drilling and those kinds of things happening in these highland up areas where our watersheds originate, you can well imagine that the chances of polluting those watersheds and those waterways increases. So in our view, wilderness is the way to protect our watersheds and therefore the water that's so critical to downstream communities.
I am Megan Kamrick. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and we're talking about the Carson National Forest and the revised management plan that's underway. We're going to go to a break, and then we'll be right back with Moises Morales. He is the clerk in Rio Arriba County.
For the first time in 15 years, the Bernalillo County District Attorney seat is up for grabs. It's the busiest judicial district in the state, and whoever wins will have a huge influence on things like which cases are prosecuted and the DA's relationship with the Albuquerque Police Department. Two Democrats are vying for the nomination in the June 7th primary election. Join KUNM and the Criminal Law Section of the New Mexico State Bar for an election forum this Thursday evening. Listen live online. Details at KUNM.org.
Support comes from UNM Foundation, supporting accomplished faculty, providing scholarships, and helping UNM's doctors, nurses, and pharmacists provide patient care, research, and treatment. More at unmfund.org.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Megan Kamrick. We're talking about our national forest plans, specifically today the Carson National Forest in northern New Mexico, which has numerous communities within its boundary. We just heard from Arturo Archuleta with the New Mexico Land Grant Council. Many land grant heirs in northern New Mexico became frustrated decades ago when lands they had used for centuries for hunting and grazing and crops were incorporated into national forest land. That meant getting permits for these activities, and it was often difficult to get them. These frustrations came to a head in 1967 when the organization Alianza Federal de Mercedes, led by Reyes López Tijerina, raided the courthouse in Tierra Amarilla to conduct a citizen's arrest of the district attorney. Moises Morales was part of that raid. He's now the county clerk in Tierra Amarilla. He's joining us from that courthouse where his office is located. Moises, are you there?
Yes.
Well, thank you for joining us this morning, Moises. Talk about why people in your area are upset. They've always been upset, but what is it about this Forest Service revision plan that is, I guess, tapping into some of these old wounds? What are they afraid they won't be able to do if there's more land designated as wilderness?
Well, Megan, it's hard to swallow this because the government already took almost 33 million acres away from the native custom and cultures in New Mexico. They created national park and reserves, a forest service, with all the land that belonged to the native custom and cultures of New Mexico. And then comes the poverty. New Mexico has the highest rate of child poverty in the United States, according to the new study by the New Mexico Voices for Children, an Albuquerque-based group. 70,000 New Mexicans need food assistance weekly. That's almost the equivalent of a city the size of Santa Fe.
And how does connect the dots for us how this relates to what we're talking about in terms of the Forest Service plans and people, what people need in your community?
Well, we are a land-based people. We live off of the land. Before the government took our land away, we were happy and we were making it. The more wilderness they made, the more poverty. I think people in the big cities and that buy food at the stores, they got to understand that the food doesn't go to the shelves just automatically. It comes from the farming and ranching communities of northern New Mexico. We have no more land base to survive if they create wilderness area. If they want to make a healthy water system, then they better start looking at the cities, because all the pollution from the cities, after they purify it, goes into the Rio Grande. Look at the Potomac and look at the Great Lakes. The Potomac is already polluted because of the cities, not from the people that are farmers.
But you heard Michael talk about the protection of some of the acequia culture, certainly a traditional part of the land-grant communities, by protecting the watersheds in the wilderness designations.
New Mexico, the Carson and the Santa Fe have really healthy forests, because our ancestors were good land stewards. We don't need no help from the outside to tell us that we need to take care of our waters. But that's not the problem. The problem is all the pollution from the factories, the airplanes, the automobiles. Let's put a stop to the space shuttle. Let's put a stop to all the airplanes. And you're going to see Mother Nature getting corrected again.
Moises, there apparently have been some bomb threats and death threats against some Forest Service offices regarding this plan. Do you fear that people's frustrations will escalate into violence?
Well, first of all, I think they're lying. I mean, we are not a violent community.
Well, no, we don't know who's making these threats, so I'm certainly not implying that your community is doing
they're
it.
They're using that as a propaganda, you know, to look good. I mean, but the Forest Service has a problem. When their job is to have a healthy ecosystem and water and timber for a growing nation, not to go around terrorizing the poor people that go for wood or give them tickets when they go hunting, you know. They have to change their attitude and be compassionate to the people that they took this land away from.
Arturo, I wanted to ask you, to Moises's point, I spoke with one of your colleagues on the Land Grant Council last year when I was doing a story. He told me about his community's cemetery being placed into wilderness. I don't know when this happened, but it's rather evocative, and I'm wondering if these previous interactions between the Forest Service and communities impact what's going on now.
Most definitely. You know, we have a history here where you have folks that continue to use the land, and then as Mr. Morales mentioned, people became criminalized in terms of doing things that they'd always done. When we had sort of the push for wilderness in the late 70s, early 80s, a lot of these land-grant communities weren't consulted, and there was some adverse impacts as a result of some of those designations. And so there's some of that sentiment that still resonates today. There wasn't the process that we have now where you have to go through the evaluation, you actually look at impacts and what we sort of advocate for. And so there's been a lot of sentiment that and bad feelings as a result of some of this loss of access and ability to sort of manage these watersheds through mechanical means.
Moises, I'm curious what you think about what Arturo is saying, that the Forest Service is trying to make things better than what happened 30 years ago. I hear your frustration. You feel like the process is still not where you want it to be. What would help improve this atmosphere so parties can talk about their concerns, in your opinion?
One of the ladies that spoke at the meeting the other day in Abiquiu said they couldn't correct the past. But you don't continue the past. I mean, you got to change your course and work with the communities. We're here forever. And they have no right to harass the people that live off of the land. What they got to understand is that we're the government, and we're the ones that own this land. They work for us. And if they don't change their attitude towards that, God knows what can happen in the whole world, you know, because people are being mistreated in all the forests.
So what are you saying in terms of violence that could happen? I mean, you're saying people might get so frustrated that they resort to other things we've seen around the West?
Okay, let me give you one example. The Congress of the United States never gave the Forest Service any law enforcement authority. That's why we elect our sheriff in our counties. They're the supreme law of the land. And the Forest Service has been playing law enforcement for a while, terrorizing the people, and they don't have that authority. Their job is to, like I said, to make a healthy ecosystem for a growing nation and make sure that the forest is healthy. I'll invite people from Albuquerque, come to my community, and you can see that they're spending all their time terrorizing the people and they're not taking care of the forest. Our forest is going to be an eyesore pretty quick, and I can show the people that.
I want to turn to Audrey for a minute. Can you address some of these concerns, Audrey? Do you feel that the Forest Service is listening to people, that they are taking traditional uses into account?
I really do think that I've worked on the Carson for 26 years, and I've seen a really big change in employees and how they first of all, they learn a lot about the area if they're not from northern New Mexico first. And I think they really respect the people and the fact that so many people still live off the land, as Arturo was talking about with fuel wood. It's really important. And we want to listen, and we are listening. We've had a lot of different public meetings out there, and we want this new plan to really provide the guidance for Forest Service employees on how the forest should be managed in the future. And that's the key, is we want it to reflect the people's values and how they really place a lot of emphasis and a lot of their heart into the land, and how we can kind of help contribute to that. And
Moises, just before we let you go, just one more question for you. You're a leader in your community, clearly you have been for decades. How do you see your role in ensuring that people can come to the table and talk about these issues without violence?
Well, you know, the sad part is, Megan, that we have a lot of veterans that went to fight for our country to, you know, to have a healthy America, you know, to protect our rights. And it's kind of disappointing that at the same time our veterans, and we lost a lot of loved ones, are fighting for our freedom, that somebody in America is taking our freedom away. And there's too many problems in the world already to create more problems. So I don't see why the people that work for us, running the Forest Service, can't treat the people, the American people, as human beings, you know. I mean, they're acting the same thing that they're acting in Iraq and all that. That's why they went and got rid of Saddam. But that's happening here in America, you know. Since the beginning of the Forest Service, our grandsisters had a real hard life, and it's continuing. I want to see the Forest Service change and work with the Native custom and cultures, like I said, that 33 3 million acres were taken without the approval of Congress.
Okay, Moises Morales, I appreciate you taking time to call in this morning. I know you're busy preparing for elections, but thank you very much for joining the conversation here
thank
on
you.
PNM. I want to go to another caller. We have Adelita. She is in Albuquerque. She is the niece of Reyes Lopez Tijerina. Adelita, are you with us? Adelita?
Yes. Hello? I'm here with you.
What is your comment or question?
Just saying, my uncle struggled, our family, and we started a clinic, La Clínica del Pueblo. We have been the start of the community, from the clinic to the land grant. I'm a little emotional because I lost my dad, my uncle, and I feel that there's a lot of justice that has not been showed as far as, you know, the land grants. We're still fighting for all of that after how many years?
So, Adelita, I hear what you're saying. In terms of this particular process around, as we look at the forest plans, tell me what you want to see, because it can't address all of that.
Well,
it's a lot,
in other words, I feel that we should take care of the land. That's our future. The ecosystem, everything that's going on in this world is going to, you know what, because we're not taking care of our earth. We're thinking about money. We're thinking about, and then politics come in.
Okay. Okay. Do you want to take that, Michael?
Well, this is Michael. I think it's important to recognize the historical trauma that our Native American brothers and sisters and our Hispanic communities throughout New Mexico, but in particular in northern New Mexico, have faced over the decades. You know, we have a history of colonization, oppression, displacement, marginalization, control over resources. And whenever a process like the forest plan revision process begins, it invokes a lot of those raw emotions that we've just heard on the phone. Some of those emotions take the form of fear. We've heard a lot of fear about access to not only areas to collect firewood, but areas to collect medicinal plants, areas to collect firewood. But as Adelita mentioned, you know, one of the values that I think all of us share, whether it be conservationists, land grant communities, and the public at large, we share values. Adelita said we need to take care of the land. I couldn't agree more. We need to take care of our water and our watersheds as well. We hear a lot about when I travel throughout northern New Mexico and talk with community members, there's a real sense that we need to protect this land for future generations. We have to think down the road. And one of the ways to do that is by engaging in this forest plan revision process. As I said at the beginning, this new process under the new guidelines really places an emphasis on public engagement. And that's where I'm excited, because we see community rooms at Forest Service meetings filled to capacity. And that's where this process starts, by people engaging in the process. But what I think is important is for people to tell the Forest Service what they want. How do they want their forests to be managed? How do they want to preserve the land and water for future generations? How do they want want to preserve the traditions and heritage and their way of life? How do they want their connections to the land to continue? And I think through this process is really an opportunity for them to do that, because as Arturo mentioned before, 30 years ago when the 1986 plan was drafted, there really wasn't this kind of robust opportunity for the public to engage. The Forest Service recognized that, changed their guidelines, and now is really the opportunity for people to come out and voice their opinion.
We have another caller, John in Albuquerque. You are on the air.
Hello. Thank you for this discussion. I think it's really important that we move forward on this issue for New Mexico, because there has been a lot of conflict in the past. And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about wilderness that is generating some of this conflict here, that people think that a lot of their access is going to be taken away. But if you look at the details, and I'm not familiar with all the details, from what I understand, some of these areas, or the majority of these areas proposed for wilderness are already roadless areas. So nobody's going to lose their access. So the bigger picture is, what is good not only for the local people, but also for New Mexico? Wilderness is a statewide resource. You know, if you look at New Mexico's economy, Moises was talking about, you know, unemployment. You know, the second biggest oil and gas, the first, second biggest economy is tourism. So people come for wilderness. Those values are very important for our industry, for all of New Mexico. And the other issue about water is that is also an international resource. I mean, people in Mexico get water from the Rio Grande, which drains from some of these watersheds. So there's a real bigger picture here that people have to look at, I think.
Okay, thank you for that comment, John. And I want to go to Kay in El Valle. Kay, you are on the air.
Hi, I'm Kay Matthews. I'm the editor of La Jicarita, and we've been covering environmental politics in northern New Mexico since 1996. And I want to follow up. John, I think, brought up something important that I want to expand on. You know, above and beyond the feelings of the land-grant folks about that more wilderness constitutes a further taking of their commons, I think there's a misperception going on about what the forest plan encompasses. And as Audrey did mention earlier, it's not just updating the plan in terms of possible expansion of wilderness. It's looking at all our management of the forest resources. And I think the most critical thing to be talking about is forest restoration. And a lot of conservation groups have been getting together and forming organizations and leveraging funding through the legislature to address forest restoration, critical in climate change and drought. And I think the misperception is that it is part of the fault of the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance and the Wilderness Society, who have been pushing the expansion of the Pecos Wilderness, which is distinct from the forest planning update. They have to look at wilderness, but the movement behind the Wilderness Alliance is to expand. It's a separate entity, and I've had conversations with Michael before, and I just feel like they're kind of creating a tempest in a teapot here when we should be focusing on the more critical issue of forest restoration.
Michael, do you want to answer that briefly before I go to a...
Sure. I mean, I think Kay's right. I think the emphasis thus far has been on the wilderness aspect of the forest plan revision process. And as was mentioned before, you know, this is one piece of a big puzzle. When I look at forest planning, I think about the analogy of a city master plan, where when you're planning out a city, you have areas where you want your schools, where you want your open space and parks, where you want your industrial development. And the same goes for a forest plan. You know, where are you going to have your recreation areas? Where are you going to have your extractive industries? And what areas are you going to protect, not only as wilderness, but maybe wild and scenic rivers?
So the intent of the wilderness designation is part of that, is to protect those areas?
Yeah, I would say yes.
Okay. Arturo, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very complex subject. You know, when we talk about wilderness, at the end of the day, I know Michael mentioned that sort of there's a lot of commonality, and I agree. There's a desire to protect these resources for our communities. I think where the point of departure comes is in how that protection is. And so wilderness is one type of protection. There's some folks that feel that they would rather be able to more actively manage those resources through forest restoration. And so there is some limits to that when you designate a wilderness. It's sort of a difficult subject. And when you talk about even one of the callers mentioned roadless areas, but that itself, it was contentious as well, right? So we do have communities in these areas that are roadless, and they're officially roadless, and is that there's no new or there's no official Forest Service roads, but there may be routes that communities use through there or historic roads that people are still sort of have hurt feelings about the fact that they lost access to these areas that they could access in the past.
I want to go to, first I should say, this is the KUNM call-in show. We're talking about the Carson National Forest and the Forest Revision Plan for managing it. You can join our conversation by calling 277-5866 or toll-free 866-899-5866. I should mention, you can also follow this conversation on Twitter, at KUNM News. And right now, we are joined by David Sanchez. He is with the New Mexico Stockmen's Association. David, welcome to the call-in show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be participating.
David, you've been involved for years giving technical input to the process of management plans for national forests. You've testified in Washington, D.C. Why are you concerned about what's happening with the Carson Forest Plan and with some of the other plans?
Well, I think our concern goes way back, and it's not just with the current actions and revision of the plans. We got involved during the 2012 planning rule and then the directives, and we spent probably hundreds of hours reviewing the proposed changes of the planning rule, because ultimately those changes were going to have an effect here in the Carson, in the Santa Fe, and other forests. So with that said, we provided comment to the 500 pages that were subjected to changes, and Stockmans in the county of Rio Riba, you know, submitted comments to the Federal Register, and from that, I made probably about 7 trips to Washington, D.C. to meet with Tony Took, who was a director of this 2012 planning rule change.
Hey, David, we have to take a really quick break. I'm going to come back and ask you specifically, I guess, what you're worried about in terms of how this might impact members of your community. So just hold tight. We're going to take a real quick break. This is the KUNM call-in show. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the UNM Bookstore, conveniently located on Main Campus at Central in Cornell. The bookstore features a coffee shop, technology store, and a great selection of books, gifts, and Loboware. Details at bookstore.unm.edu.
I'm Lauren Schiller. On the next Inflection Point,
that there are other ways to be a good mom and other ways to be a good wife without being the one, you know, cooking dinner every day and bringing the kids to school every day.
The tectonic shift of gender roles. That's our next inflection point.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
We are back. This is the KUNM call-in show. I'm Megan Kamrick. I have David Sanchez on the phone. And real quick, David, I just want to read an email comment. It kind of relates to what you're talking about. Byron said he was in the Jemez Mountains yesterday. He said he was appalled at how much damage livestock was causing along the banks of small rivers and near campsites. And David, I know the Stockmen's Association, you're representing ranchers. Can you talk about that, some of the concerns that people have regarding those issues?
Well, you know, we've dealt with those concerns and those allegations for, you know, 20, 30 years. And the bottom line is that when those allegations and conflicts have been brought to the table, and we've dealt with a Forest Service official, we've had the opportunity to bring in range scientists from New Mexico State, and I would say 9 out of 10 cases, those allegations have been dismissed, and the Forest Service that was supporting those had to change their decisions because the science showed that there were nothing but allegations. And that's something I think that we've dealt with historically, is that lots of folks from the city come out to our backyard where we live, whether the Carson or the Santa Fe, and make this allegations because they've got their agendas, they've got their organizations, and they're getting either federal grants or monies, and they're alarmist.
So, well, now, let me push back a little bit. This is a gentleman who basically said he was hiking, and he's just observing as he's hiking, seeing what he sees as damage to the environment from perhaps not responsible grazing practices. Not everyone possibly is as responsible as others are.
Well, again, everybody's entitled to their opinion, and we have lots of folks that don't understand what actual conditions are on the ground. So for that reason, you know, we've always asked us for scientific peer review of any of those situations. And again, as I said, 9 out of 10 times, this people are, their opinions are, you know, they are what they are, you know, but the bottom line is that we operate and we manage under best practices and we use sound science. So
do you feel like that sound, what you're saying, peer review, sound science, is that part of the process right now?
Well, it's not part of the process right now. And fundamentally what's going on with the Carson and the Santa Fe is really a flawed approach, because during the 2012 planning rule, the secretary and the agency are mandated by law, under federal law, that a scientific peer review was supposed to have taken place. And under 16 U.S. Code 1604, which is the federal law for National Forest Service Land and Resource Management, the secretary was obligated and mandated by that law to conduct an independent scientific peer review of this new regulations, and we brought it to their attention, and they never did. So with that said, now we are in the process of revising the Carson plan and the Santa Fe plan based on the 2012 planning rule and those directives. And we already have grave concern because no scientific peer review took place, and specifically in the areas of range land management and science and economics. They're starting off with a flawed approach, in our opinion. And we've asked that the Carson and the Santa Fe plan be peer reviewed by an independent team of scientists, and we're getting resistance from the agency.
David, let me ask Audrey. Audrey, could you address those concerns David has brought up?
Well, the concerns about a scientific peer review on regulations is at a national level, and that's not something I can really comment on. As far as having any kind of peer review when we do provide products, right now we're not in that stage of the process. We haven't developed even a draft plan. But I look at peer review as
everybody. So when you develop a draft plan, that's when it will
go
for peer review?
Well, and everyone will have a chance to review. And we have lower-level reviews that are within the agency itself. We have scientists within the agency that will take a look. We'll make sure that the science we base all and inform the plan will also be reviewed. But at this point in the process, we're really not there.
I want to go to the phones real quick. Bob is in Albuquerque. Bob, are you there? What is your question?
Yes. Good morning, Megan. You know, I just a couple of things I wanted to throw into the discussion, too. One is I think that missing from the voice on discussions, and this it seems like from what I can tell, is the indigenous people who were there before the Spanish land grant people took it from them. And I think that people, when they talk about the land grants, ought to realize that the land grants were created by the King of Spain to lure settlers into the frontier to drive back the indigenous people so that the land could be opened up for all kinds of industrial uses. And so there's if we want to talk about history there and interest, there's much more to this. And I think going forward, I think restoration is, like Kay was saying, is important. The Cattlemen's Association includes a lot of the land-grant people, and my experience has been seeing that a lot of the people who are pushing the land-grant perspective want to the right to individually go in and log and run cattle and turn the forests and the lands into commercial products. The Cattlemen's Association is the worst to me because I've camped in there, too, and woke up in the morning and come out of my tent and stepped right in cow pie. And they've been going through my campsite over during the night. And the cattlemen, people who want to run those, say that, you know, this doesn't exist, but my God, it's all over the place. And those are some of the issues that I think that we need to address is getting the cattle grazing out of the national forests.
Okay.
And bringing in the indigenous people more.
Arturo, can you address those concerns?
Sure. You know, it's not as a black and white picture I think that folks would like to paint in terms of saying, like, here's the start point and here's the end point for indigenous communities. I myself, for example, I have my great-great-grandparents come from Abiquiu, which is a Haniseto settlement. It was a grant, but it was settled by full-blooded Native Americans. And so, you know, we have a very mixed shared history. A lot of our communities are either Haniseto or Mestizo communities. So it's not as black and white as being able to say, well, this group and not that group. You know, so really what it comes down to is sort of our communities are land-based people that sort of live and thrive off of the land and those traditional uses, many which we share with Native American communities. And we're able to sort of that's one area where we can agree when it comes to the forest plan. We've been sitting down at the table as part of cooperative agencies. Some of the tribes and pueblos have as well. And then the importance of protecting those sort of traditional uses and access to those has come up both from our end and also from some of those communities.
Okay, I'm going to go to the David, you're still on the phone with us.
Yes, I am.
I'm sorry. Did you want to comment on what we just heard from our caller and from Arturo or from another perspective?
Yes, I have two comments, basically, you know, rebuttal nature. And first is for Audrey's statement. She's incorrect when she says that they can use scientists and folks within the Forest Service. The law is very specific. And it says that they shall appoint a committee of scientists who are not officers or employees of the Forest Service. And so with regard to the peer review of this plan, there has to be scientists and some level of peer review in the conceptual stages and the draft stages, because once you set that framework, they're going to go through with it. And I'm specifically talking about what they're doing right now within the wilderness designation process. They've identified in this maps all these areas in the Carson that are being evaluated, but they don't give you any information, and they haven't identified what the impacts are going to be socially or economically to the Native Americans or the Hispanics that have been here the longest utilizing those areas. So, first of all, Audrey is completely incorrect when she said that they can use scientists or staff within the Forest Service. The law does not provide that latitude for them. And we have sent numerous communications to Calvin Joyner on this, and we're just not getting any cooperation out of the regional office on that. With regard to other comments that have been made, yes, there are stockmen that are land-grant heirs, and yes, many of our stockmen in northern New Mexico are descendants of the Spanish introduction, and I go back to 1598 when the livestock was brought into this continent. Northern New Mexico is the birthplace of the livestock industry, and if there are folks that are allergic to cow pies, like Bob mentioned, you know, if he's allergic to that, he ought to just stay out of the forest, because these rural communities are completely dependent on natural resources, and natural utilization of natural resources by cattle is a holistic practice to reduce those fuel loads so that we don't have catastrophic fires. It's informed people like Bob that come out to the forest, come out to this rural areas where we live day in and day out, and make this kind of assumptions and this type of comments. You know, one trip to the forest once a year and then they're experts. I think we're tired of those kind of people.
Okay. David Sanchez with the New Mexico Stockmen's Association, I appreciate you joining us this morning on the call-in show. Thank you so much. Appreciate your comments.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to just go quickly. We have several questions about fire, and it has to do with the wilderness designation and whether it will create more vulnerability for wildfires and how the Forest Service will address wildfire issues. Can you talk about that, Audrey, if we have more wilderness designation? Maybe talk a little bit about the intent of a wilderness designation and how you would address fire.
Well, if we're looking at restoration, as Kay was talking about earlier, an area that we recommend for wilderness, which is still way down the line, we're talking about, people are saying we're proposing wilderness right now and roadless areas, and that's not where we are.
And that has to be decided by Congress.
And that has to be decided by Congress. Mm-hmm. All we can do is provide a recommendation. But Kay is right in that she's saying that if we do look at area, we should be looking at areas, if we're going to recommend to Congress for wilderness, some of the impacts that could be. And that's where we do that during the environmental impact analysis. And we'll be looking at those things. So if we do have certain areas on the forest that we're going to recommend to Congress for wilderness, then we are going to have to look at what are the effects on traditional cultural uses, what are the economic effects, what are the effects on fire, on being able to treat, because we wouldn't be able to treat in areas that may be close to communities. We'd have to take all of that into consideration. And to some extent, we're already doing that in terms of the evaluation process. We're looking at those areas and making sure that, if we've already planned to do some restoration work in there, we probably wouldn't want to include that necessarily in the evaluation process.
Did you want to say something?
Fires is a concern that all of us have, not only as New Mexicans, but as people across the West in this time of drought and climate change. And one thing I want to point out is that, there's a misperception out there that I think wilderness advocates and conservationists want to turn the entire forest into a wilderness. That's just not accurate. I mean, I think the Carson National Forest right now contains less than 7% wilderness areas. So I think there's a lot of opportunities for additional protections throughout the Carson, and restoration is a critical component to forest restoration, to a forest health. I'm sorry, and the Wilderness Society supports forest restoration. We don't believe that every place should be wilderness, and that there are places that should be actively restored to attempt to get it back to forest health.
Well, clearly we have much more to talk about. So I want to thank all of our callers for calling in today, and my guests, David Sanchez of the New Mexico Stockmen's Association, Audrey Kirkendall with the Carson National Forest and U.S. Forest Service, Michael Casaus with the Wilderness Society, Arturo Archuleta with New Mexico Land Grant Council, and Moises Morales, the Rio Arriba County Clerk. If you missed any of our program, or if you'd like to share it with a friend, the audio of the show will be posted to our website, KUNM.org, where you can also find previous call-in shows. We've also posted articles and links about the Carson Forest and the revisions plans by the Forest Service and other resources to our website, as well as ways they can weigh in on the process. Next Thursday morning on the KUNM call-in show, some workers in the New Mexico Human Services Department allege their bosses changed applications to keep people from accessing emergency food assistance. We'll talk about the food stamp program from its origins to where things stand today. That's next Thursday morning at 8 here on 89.9 KUNM. Thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer today. Anna Landy live tweeted the show. Ed Williams screened your calls today. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Megan Kamrick. Thanks for joining us. This is KUNM.